The topic for this evening, I was asked when I was visiting in Chicago, Bhakti Vriksha Group, to speak on the same topic, or I was asked to speak on a topic, so I decided to speak on the same topic here, because it's, I thought it might be appropriate for New Year's Day, and a little bit along the same theme as our discussion yesterday evening, resolving to go forward and let go of the past, the old, bring out the old and bring in the new, or vice versa. So 1866 Bhagavad Gita and how to apply it. Who amongst our scholarly youth, shloka reciters, knows 1866 Bhagavad Gita? Do you know 1866 Bhagavad Gita? Can you say it a little louder? Okay. Do you know the translation? No? Okay. 1866?
Translation?
No, this is the verse. We'll start with the verse. Next? Don't know?
Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam saranam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami vasutaha.
Yes, no?
Sorry.
Go ahead. Give it a try.
Sarvadharma parityajya mamekam saranam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami vasutaha.
Should I ask your son? You know the verse? No? It's a nice one to learn. It's the most important verse of the entire Bhagavad Gita, or the concluding instruction of Krishna given to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. And the translation. You know the translation? Abandon.
Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all sinful reactions.
The last part is also important. Masuchaha. Masuchaha. Do not fear. Masuchaha. In case you're doubting, don't doubt. Everything's all right. So, the nice purport for this verse. The Lord has described various kinds of knowledge and processes of religion. Knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, knowledge of the Supersoul, knowledge of different types of orders and statuses of social life, knowledge of the renounced order of life, knowledge of non-attachment, sense and mind control, meditation, etc. He describes in so many ways different types of religion. Now, in summarizing Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that Arjuna should just give up all the processes that have been explained to him. He should just simply surrender to Krishna. That surrender will save him from all kinds of sinful reactions, for the Lord personally promises to protect him. Paragraph. In the seventh chapter, it was said that only one who has become freed from all sinful reactions can take to the worship of Lord Krishna. Thus one may think that unless he is freed from all sinful reactions, he cannot take to the surrendering process. To such doubts, it is here said that even if one is not freed from all sinful reactions, simply by the process of surrendering to Sri Krishna, he is automatically freed. There is no need of strenuous effort to free oneself from sinful reactions. One should unhesitatingly accept Krishna as the supreme savior of all living entities with faith and love, one should surrender unto Him. Paragraph. The process of surrender to Krishna is described in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.676. Anukoyasya sankalpa pratikoyasya varjanam rashikshatiti vishvaso goptritve varanam tata anranikshepa karpanye shadvidha sharanagatihi. Sounds nice, huh? According to the devotional process, one should simply accept such religious principles that will lead ultimately to devotional service of the Lord. One may perform a particular occupational duty according to his position in the social order, but if by executing his duty one does not come to the point of Krishna consciousness, then all his activities are in vain. Anything that does not lead to the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness should be avoided. One should be confident that in all circumstances Krishna will protect him from all difficulties. There is no need of thinking how one should keep the body and soul together. Krishna will see to that. One should always think himself helpless. That's pretty easy. And should consider Krishna the only basis of his progress in life. As soon as one seriously engages himself in devotional service to the Lord in full Krishna consciousness, at once he becomes freed from all contamination of material nature. There are different processes of religion and purificatory processes by cultivation of knowledge, meditation, in the mystic yoga system, etc. But one who surrenders unto Krishna does not have to execute so many methods. That simple surrender unto Krishna will save him from unnecessarily wasting time. And one can thus make all progress at once and be freed from all sinful reactions. Paragraph. One should be attracted by the beautiful vision of Krishna. His name is Krishna because he is all attractive. One who becomes attracted by the beautiful, all-powerful, omnipotent vision of Krishna is fortunate. There are different kinds of transcendentalists, some of them are attached to the impersonal Brahman vision. Some of them are attracted by the super soul feature, etc. But one who is attracted by the personal feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and above all, one who is attracted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna himself, is the most perfect transcendentalist. In other words, devotional service to Krishna in full consciousness is the most confidential part of knowledge, and this is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Karma yogis, empiric philosophers, mystics, and devotees are all called transcendentalists, but one who is a pure devotee is the best of all. This particular word used here, maasuchaha, don't fear, don't hesitate, don't worry, are very significant. One may be perplexed as to how one can give up all kinds of religious forms and simply surrender unto Krishna. But such worry is useless. End of purport. Any questions? This is the essence, as Prabhupada stated, the essence of the message of Bhagavad Gita. And taking up the essence is a very good plan. The application, because that's where you separate the men from the boys, or those that don't make advancement from those that make advancement. It comes in the application part, the application of the essence. So, the essence is the consciousness of feeling oneself fully in Krishna's care and Krishna's protection and Krishna's shelter and the position of safety. Something that, without exception, everybody wants. At least they want the feeling without Krishna, or as Prabhupada puts it, the kingdom of God without God. And that's not how the system works. The kingdom of God without God is this place, and in this place, the material world, the absence of that shelter-taking position is prominent, although different processes of religion have some element, some component of that for elevation, for purification, ideally for recognizing God in our relationship with Him. But the essence is that part, the recognizing our relationship with Him and taking shelter of Him. The obstacles are many, but the essence of those obstacles is quite simple. It's our spirit of wishing to enjoy independently, or give it a specific form and it becomes enjoyment of fruitive activities. Who's that? Huh? That's Prahlad. He's singing. Prahlad is singing?
Yes, he's playing on the keyboard and singing the notes a lot.
Ah. Okay. Does he have a keyboard at home?
Does he have a keyboard at home? No.
He's learning. Very spontaneously. He watches Panchatattva and then he gets a keyboard. Okay. Somebody with a keyboard. So, let's go back a little bit. Don't just not to try to do too many things, but go back a little bit to chapter 2, text 47, Bhagavad Gita. I'll make it real easy. For persons who are exposed to Hare Krishna movement, or ISKCON, when they're asked the question, what's the most important verse summarizing the whole message of Bhagavad Gita, 1866, is pointed to? And my experience is, persons that don't have that experience with, you know, they're not familiar with Prabhupada's teachings and Prabhupada's books, and you ask the same question, they give that verse. Karma nevadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. I'm waiting for the scream. And then there's the other one that really, the loud one that comes after the first one.
After taking a deep breath.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
Really healthy.
Yeah. One more time. So, in that verse, which many people... it's particularly Gujaratis, at least that's my experience, but it's not reserved or restricted to them. That verse, they feel that's the essence of Bhagavad Gita. And there's some merit in that that message of Bhagavad Gita is speaking, it's deflating, it's relieving the balloon of fruitive activity. Because the nature of fruitive activity is I do something because I want to be the enjoyer of the fruit of that something. And whatever that something is, if it's a religious something or a non-religious something, whatever it is, I want to be the enjoyer of that something. So in that verse, Krishna is saying, you're entitled to perform your prescribed duty, but you're not entitled to the fruit of the performance of that prescribed duty. So what in the world would be the motivation for someone that's entitled to do something and can't enjoy the fruit of that something to do that something? It's not within our experience. People don't go around doing things, even prescribed things, without some purpose, and the purpose is to enjoy the fruits of that something, either in this world or the next, but something. Otherwise, why do it? What's the motivation? What's the consciousness? There is a correlation between that verse and 1866, and that is one of the motivations of chapter 2, text 47, or non-fruitive work, is through non-fruitive work, you're not bound to a reaction. You're freed from karma. You're karma free. Akarma. No bondage. When you, these two things, prescribe duty without attachment to the fruits of your prescribed duties. So, karma palatyag. There's no reaction. But the converse is, even if one does prescribed duty and thinks of oneself as the enjoyer of the fruit of that prescribed duty or the cause of the result, then one is bound by the karma of that activity. And then bound by the karma of the activity, I do prescribed duty, then I become elevated in pious credit in this life and more enjoyment in the next life until the pious credit becomes exhausted, my punya account gets spent, and I have to come back to this plane and do it again. The Ferris wheel. And that's strapped onto the Ferris wheel. It can go on as long as one continues pious activities with the idea of being the enjoyer of the fruits of those pious activities. One can go do 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 do. Also, if one neglects the performance of pious duties or makes mistakes in the course of execution of pious duties. Does anybody here ever make a mistake? We all make mistakes. And there's bondage. Even you're trying to do something good and there's a mistake. You're bound to the good and you're bound to the mistake, the reaction. It's the mix. And therefore, in that program of pious activities, there's a process of atonement for mistakes to counteract the reaction for the mistakes inadvertently made, unavoidably and inadvertently made, so that one can just get the good and not get the reaction for the bad. That's part of the process. But in any case, whether it's do 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 or do 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 do, if it's down by more sinful reactions that I didn't counter. So in either case, there's bondage. So 247 is how to become bondage free. It's a transcendental message. Therefore, some take it as the the essence of Bhagavad Gita. What's the second half of that verse? Kamranye varikarase ma phaleshu kadachana.
Ma karma phalahetu or ma te stvangvilto karma.
So the third line is, don't consider yourself to be the cause of the phala. If you're not the cause of the fruit, then what is the cause of the fruit? That's discussed in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's prakriti. Material nature, never consider yourself to be the cause of action. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the fruit of action. And never consider yourself to be the cause of inducing others to act. Because all that is being carried out by material nature. So that cuts out a lot of options. There's one option that's left, and that's performance of prescribed duty. Where does the fruit come from? Material nature. Where does it go to? To Vishnu. It goes somewhere, so you offer it to Vishnu. That's the principle that's being described. You could say karma yoga principle. The section that is that this is within the chapter 2 section is Buddha Yoga section. Yes? Because the previous section of chapter 2 is Sankhya section, where Arjun's question is, please instruct me, I don't know what is my duty. So Krishna instructs, here's, first of all, before your duty, here's who you are. And we'll talk about duty. You're a spirit soul. You're distinct from matter. So now, once you understand conceptually you're distinct from matter, how do you work in that consciousness? How do you keep that in the front of your consciousness while you're working? And that's Buddhi Yoga, where all activities that are done are very singular in purpose. Vyavasayatmika Buddhi Ekeha Kurunandana. And that singular purpose is to work, do your activity for the satisfaction of the Supreme. So the fruit goes to the Supreme. The performance of the duty is for the pleasure of the Supreme. And then there's three do nots. Don't consider yourself the enjoyer of the fruit. Don't consider yourself the cause of the fruit. Never be attached to inaction. Because that's Arjuna's plan for becoming karma free. It's karma sannyas. Just give up work, and if I give up work, then there's no bondage. Business is done. But Krishna's argument is non-performance of duty is sinful. You can't not perform duty, because that's sinful. Especially when you're not a liberated soul. And that's pretty much all of us. So those that are perfected souls, they have no obligation. They have no duty. Because the duty is for those who are impelled by the modes of nature and have some tendency to do some work. And so we must act according to that tendency to do some work. So then, from that, there's so many duties of acquiring knowledge and performance of varna and ashram duties and meditation and so many nice things. After which comes 1826 or 1866, where Krishna says, now you can put that to the side and just do this one thing, to surrender unto me. So it was a little bit, we discussed when the devotee asked the question, what about prescribed duties? He doesn't mean we become irreligious, we just surrender to Krishna and be irreligious, but rather we accept those things. Part of the principle of surrender includes the first two items. Things that are favorable for Krishna's service. We accept them. So behind the one thing, there's so many things. Following our prescribed duty. We follow prescribed duty. Behind the one principle that it's for the purpose of increasing devotional service or bringing one to the point of surrender to Krishna. Although because it brings me to, so that's the objective. And things that don't, leave them to the side. Anukalyasha, sankalpa, pratikul. So these are the principles of six angas, or limbs of surrender. So in other words, using other language, these other nice teachings of Bhagavad Gita, they're a subset of this one thing. And mathematicians know what subsets means. There's something, and included in that something is the subset, and there's so many subsets that all are part of this one thing. So they're already there. So we do them because they're already there, and we do them for the purpose of this one thing. Surrender to Krishna. And when doing like that, now what about, okay, I'm surrendering to Krishna, what about my necessities? There are necessities. And the understanding of the principle of surrender is that Krishna provides my necessities. Goptritve. He's my maintainer. And so that doesn't mean, okay, I'll sit around in a lounge chair and sip lemonade and Krishna will maintain me. And I'll tap my foot a little impatiently if he doesn't hurry up and maintain me. That's not what it means. It means that while I'm doing something, it's not my work that's maintaining me. This is called a secular view of religion, where there's the worldly thing that I do, and that's I work and I maintain myself. And then over here is the department where I worship God. That's secularism. Separation of God or church and state, what I do for my responsibilities to my family and to my country and to society. And I separate the two. Krishna's teaching is not a secular teaching. Krishna's teaching is a holistic teaching. Maybe that's a nice way to say it. It's the principle of surrender to Krishna includes, as I'm working in chapter 2, text 47, consciousness, I'm performing my prescribed duty, it's not me who is producing the fruit of my prescribed duty. It's material nature under Krishna's direction. And Krishna provides what I need through that. Because otherwise, some persons can work very, 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 very hard and have next to nothing. And some persons hardly work and they have more than what they need. So it's not, what we need is not coming from our work. What we need is coming from the maintainer. So I work for Krishna and Krishna maintains me, and that's the way it is. That's the consciousness of one who surrendered to Krishna. And protection. Because we have this body, there's animal propensities or propensities of requiring to protect the body, protect our well-being. And the consciousness of one who surrendered to Krishna is, Krishna is my protector. So that doesn't mean it's rush hour traffic and we just walk across the expressway because we want to get to the other side and Krishna will protect me because Krishna is my protector. We don't do stupid things or put Krishna in a position where he has to go out of his way to protect us. But rather, our position is service. And we recognize it's not my capacity to protect, but it's Krishna's capacity to protect. If there's protection, it's coming from Krishna. Parents naturally want to extend protection to their children and dependents of various kinds. But Prabhupada gives the example, supposing some family member has an illness and you can, all the best doctors that money can buy, is there any guarantee that that person will not remain sick or well or become well or they'll live because you made this great effort for protecting their health? No guarantee at all. No guarantee. if there is protection, we do what we need to do in service department, and Krishna is the protecting department. And one who is surrendered to Krishna recognizes that reality. He's our protector. He's my shelter. And recognizing all of those things, there's this, using Prabhupada's words, feeling oneself quite insufficient, quite tiny, and incompetent, and humble. And that's a necessary ingredient for surrender. Otherwise, if one thinks otherwise, who's going to surrender? The reality is we're very tiny and very insignificant and very dependent. And so in that mood of humility, there's surrender to Krishna, taking shelter of Krishna. I'll just share this. Maybe some of you heard, because there was a live stream presentation of that, the Christmas weekend seminar that we held in Chicago, and particularly Davida spoke about this for some time, but it came out in a number of different ways. In the lives of very advanced personalities, they have a feeling that says, it's a feeling of humility, that I have no quality. They feel themselves quite disqualified. Like the Ashabandha prayer of Rupa Goswami that's quoted in Nectar of Devotion. You look in me, look inside me, and you'll find no good qualities. I have abundant disqualification and no qualification. I'm not highly learned. I don't have any deep devotion. I don't have any enthusiasm to serve. I'm not born in a good family. Any way you want to look, I'm disqualified. But nonetheless, although I'm this wretched being, still I have great hope. Sense of humility is not a, it can be, in a material sense, it's defeat. Or in a spiritual sense, or just mode of ignorance, basically, feeling sad and depressed and forlorn and that kind of melancholy. But the devotee, while feeling those feelings of humility, feels great enthusiasm, because there's one good thing. Krishna is very kind, and that's my hope. I'm placing my hope in Krishna. So therefore, with that feeling of humility, I dedicate everything. Whatever it is, the little something, whatever that is that I have access to, I dedicate that to Krishna's service. My body, my mind, and my words, fully dedicated to Krishna's service. This is the mood of one who is surrendering to Krishna. And at least in stages, step by step by step, one can cultivate that principle of surrender. And by that principle of surrender, the same thing that's spoken of in chapter 2, that is, becoming karma-free, is completely taken care of. Whatever. So someone may think, well, wait a minute. When I grew up, I used to do such and such. Now, if I just abandon all varieties of such and such and just surrender to Krishna, will I not receive some reaction for abandoning this religious such and such that I used to do? Maybe I should still keep doing that, because otherwise, I'll get spanked. I'll be guilty of some wrong. I'll be, what somebody was sharing with me this way, not sufficiently grateful for that which has helped me previously, and since I received help previously, I should express that gratitude. So I'm uncertain about neglecting that something along with surrendering to Krishna. So therefore Krishna says, Masuchaha, don't worry. And the way that he Prabhupada ends the purport is it's that kind of worrying is a waste of energy. It's useless. Because those other things are meant to bring one to that position. You come to that position, then it's fulfilled. If you ask Hanuman, is it okay if I worship Ram? I was worshiping you. Is it okay if I worship Ram? What's Hanuman going to say? Jai Ram, Shri Ram. Worship Ram. There's no disappointing of Hanuman by doing like that. And those who are, similarly, those who are able to give any well-wishing benediction, benefit to our life, that's the essence. And therefore, the verse is saying, take the essence. Surrender unto Krishna. So how to apply that? Well, so much depends upon our lives, and then you take the principle and hold the principle up to your life. And what are those things that have been beneficial for you? Those things that have been beneficial for you, place the essence of those beneficial things in very, very clear focus of surrendering to Krishna. Let them assist you in surrendering to Krishna. Anukulyasya sankalpa. Accept those things in that spirit, in that mood. Then it's like rocket fuel, that you just go towards the goal, towards the essence of spiritual progress. And the whole of life, at least human form of life, is meant to achieve that ultimate destination. And those things, like the New Year's resolution part, that part of the idea was thinking to take this, to give something up. It's difficult to give things up when you're attached to those things. But if the principle is in place that if it's not beneficial for my Krishna consciousness, and I want to give it up. I'll just share one little thing from the Japa retreat. I just got a note today from a teenager that took part in the Japa retreat. And they were saying that the first 45 rounds out of the 64 that they chanted, they were looking for a realization. They were able to chant, and it wasn't like a struggle or a chore, but they had this mentality that I'm hoping Krishna will give some realization. Kind of, I'll do this and you do that mentality. Not exactly, but something like that. And then this devotee was sharing that it wasn't happening. And they understood inherently the mentality that I'm carrying is not appealing to Krishna. So that we had around the room different illustrations, like this nice illustration of Lord Chaitanya and the Sankirtan party in Navadvip or in Mayapur. So there was Gaur Nitai, and the devotee was sharing, they just looked at Gaur Nitai, the photograph. They forgot, searching for some realization. And they just looked at Gaur Nitai, and they felt something mystical started to happen. All of the fruitive thing, I'm doing this, I want that, just went away. And they felt the presence of Gaur Nitai giving their mercy. And it kept going on, giving the mercy to all the people in the room. And here we were connecting with their giving of their mercy. And it just like it kept going and going and going and going and going until they completed their 64 rounds. And then the bell rang and something happened. I don't know. They didn't say what happened after that. But the fruitive mentality is something that we carry even to the arena of devotional service. I think some of us have noticed that. And that's not satisfying. I think we've also noticed that. And even we're doing devotional service, if it's in that mentality, it that doesn't give satisfaction to the self. Yenat ma suprasediti. So the application is let go of that fruitive mentality and put in its place the position of surrender. I'm doing what I'm doing for the pleasure of Krishna, Guru and Krishna. Like this definition that I mentioned the other day of sacrifice. Maybe it was this morning. Sacrifice, Prabhupada's definition, is subordinating our own desire for to fulfill the desire of another. And everyone is doing that. Devotee, non-devotee, it doesn't matter. Everyone is doing that. The birds are, you know, all species of life. They have some interest and they're subordinating that interest for the interest of others. It's just part of what we do. So take that principle of sacrifice and elevate it beyond the selfish one to, you know, what am I going to get from it, the fruitive mentality, to pleasing the personality of Godhead. And that carries one into the internal potency, and the internal potency has a whole other set of rules. It's a lot more friendly. Some of the things that the devotees were sharing was just amazing. When that mood of surrender and feeling Krishna's shelter took place, so many wonderful experiences. Shyamasundara was describing around his 50th round, because he had spent the last Kartik month in Vrindavan doing the whole Brajmandal Prakrama. So his thoughts went to being in Vrindavan. Then he was describing, he was just chanting, and as he was chanting, he was in Vrindavan. And then in the distance, he saw what looked like Krishna and the cowherd boys with the cows. So he was very eagerly calling and trying to go to where Krishna and Balaram were with the cowherd boys. And then he heard the nice sounds of the birds, and just like his whole thought process went to being with Krishna in Vrindavan. It was amazing. He said it just went on and on and on. He didn't say whether he ever met Krishna, but just the mood of reaching to Krishna, trying to be in Krishna's presence, just through the medium of chanting the holy name. So that doesn't happen without surrender. It doesn't happen when there's fruitive mentality. Even you're doing some devotional practice. So the surrender to Krishna is the essence, even with the devotional practice, what to speak of any other, what Prabhupada calls high-grade activities. Those are subordinated to the essence principle, surrender unto Krishna. And each according to our path, our trajectory of spiritual evolution, and the particular things that make up our life at different points in time, because we're all in some different point of our life. According to that, what's suitable, then apply the principle of look to the essence. If you look the essence, you'll find it. And if you don't look to the essence, but you look to the fruitive thing, you won't find the essence. And whatever it is that transpires, it's temporary and it's not satisfying. Or more stronger, it burns like fire. Dushparina analena cha. But the chanting of the holy name extinguishes that anala, that fire of material existence. Up to the root of material existence. Very nice. So, hope you all in this new year get on the Maha Mantra bandwagon and increase qualitatively and quantitatively and get Krishna's mercy that way. And as you advance, or any one of the community members advances, all others will also benefit just by being in the presence of someone who's making some advancement. We'll all benefit. So each of you, make some nice advancements so the others can also benefit from your nice advancement. We can all advance together in Krishna consciousness. I guess that's the end of the class.
Confirmation.
Any thoughts or discussion? The Prashadam team is rustling. Yeah, I see. I'm looking at you, though. Anything, Lal Gopal? Okay.
I like the realization that Mataji last night was sharing about her chanting, about how in the beginning it seemed an impossible task merely to find the time. But then through chanting, she found there was time to chant. It seems that oftentimes the perceived obstacles to our doing devotional service, whether it's chanting or rendering service at the temple or associating with devotees or getting away from all of the other things we have to do, is really 99% of it is just present in the mind.
Because of that resistance within the mind, one of the points was, time acts differently. It's just there isn't time. Or as Prabhupada speaks or writes in Ishopanishad, the nature of the external energy is such that if we turn our attention away from Krishna, then the material energy keeps us very busy. And if we turn our attention to Krishna, then the material energy backs off and time works differently, and we're in the internal energy, and there was the time after all. But just because the external energy versus the internal energy is operating, or the other way around. But it's one energy depending upon how we regard Krishna. That one energy acts this way, same energy acts that way. Internal, external potency. Yes.
Regarding the prescribed duties and the principle of sanada, in a household life, there are different family members, husband, wife, children, and different the members may be advancing at different levels.
Yeah.
So, how do we balance the spiritual life in such a way that the person who is in advanced level doesn't disturb the people in the lower level, and at the same time you don't want to compromise your own...
Yeah, the other way around. You don't want the other problem. I'll say it in a way that a newly married couple, they just finished their first year of marriage, and then they just wrote to me expressing, we have this realization. We have to learn to accept one another. So we're going to spend our this coming year, their New Year's resolution, their second year of marriage resolution, is increase their regulation and devotional practices, and increase their acceptance of one another. Then it's not, you know, a detriment, nor, you know, to be the more advanced member with the less advanced member. It's, you know, it's an acceptance, and vice versa. The one who's less advanced doesn't need to be trepidatious. They have an advantage. They have a facility given by Krishna. Someone is helping them. So by that principle of acceptance, there's a wall in. When I go to Gita Nagari for retreats, I stay in the Institute House, which is where Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj stayed. And on the wall, one of the things he has on the wall, I made a copy of. And I'll gladly supply it if anybody asks for a copy. On who is a real friend. I have it printed out and on my desk. That, you know, a true friend is one who knows who you are. They know that your shortcomings and the tribulations that you pass through. They've accepted all of that, and at the same time, they're still gently helping you to grow. Something like that. So then, it's not a problem. Either way, the one, or this one or that one, not a problem. And that's what a relationship is, of family member, husband, wife, children, different stages of their spiritual paths. I know a number of families where the children are they're inspiring the parents to go further because the children are particularly gifted and blessed spiritually. Like they're the ones that let's chant, or let's have kirtan, or let's go to the temple, kind of thing. Yes.
This is about this from this yesterday's class about New Year's resolution.
Okay.
You were talking about a couple of things, and one you talked about anger, not to become anger. So kind of catched my mind. So I thought I would like to take that as my this year resolution and work on that. And also to overcome that, I was meditating on it, and I got one of your other instructions which says forgive and forget. So I'm going to use that to apply to overcome that anger. I hope that I will work on this, will work for me with your blessings, and that
you have my full blessings.
I also beg your pardon and mercy for not to encounter such a situation which provokes my anger.
Uh-huh. Well, there's one thing that can easily accomplish that. You just become God, and then you can make sure there's no circumstances that provoke your anger. Or the converse is, just recognize that you're not the controller of your circumstances. And therefore, since that is, you honor the one who is the controller of your circumstances, in all circumstances. That means even in the provoking ones. You honor the person who is the controller of your circumstances. Or another way of saying is, say yes to Krishna. I invite you to Krishna Leela was the one that did the exercise, the say yes to Krishna exercise. And if you can have some conversation with her and or the ones who facilitated were Jagatananda and Ananda Vrindavan, speak with them on What does Maharaj mean, or what does that phrase mean? Say yes to Krishna. What's that all about? I've spoken about it, but you know, go directly to them. It was, I'll just say it for the benefit of everybody here. Krishna Lila is a very gifted person in many, many ways. So one of the things that she did during this retreat was she got one of those flip charts and stood with her pen poised or had somebody writing saying, can you name some situations in your life that irritate you? Anything, something that irritates you, something you wish it wasn't like that. And it, you know, it kind of started slowly. But, you know, after the 7th, 8th sheet of suggestions, and everyone was laughing and laughing, and they weren't like fictitious things, they were things that really bug people. And, okay, I think we have a nice wholesome list here. Now, we'll call that saying no to Krishna, because he's the controller of circumstances that you're saying no to. I don't like that. Now, how can we turn that no into a yes? And, you know, there was some discussion, and it was role play. And they had, you know, people sitting, someone here and someone there, and something was happening, and they were, you know, the language of, I don't like this, and why you do this, and, you know, that kind of thing. And then creatively, she didn't, like, put words in their mouth, but how do you turn it into a say yes to Krishna message? And it was amazing. It was, as you say in Indian English, it was an eye-opener. It has everything to do with non-acceptance of the circumstances that provoke me, has everything to do with your relationship with Krishna. It's not the other person as much as, or the circumstance, as it is your relationship with Krishna. Supposing at the front end it was say yes to Krishna. You don't have to like the circumstance, but you say yes to Krishna. And then what do you feel, and what do you do, and how do you speak? It's a whole other program. Maybe we should do that one again. Never come and do that exercise again. And just then it went to the next stage, the next sequence. I don't even know what the next sequence was, but everyone came out of that lit up like a Christmas tree. Boy, they were bright and happy. Thinking, oh, I can say yes to Krishna, even troubling circumstances. There's a Sanskrit word. It's D-H-I-R-A, Dhira. You know that one, right? You remained undisturbed even when there is cause for disturbance. How is that? You say yes to Krishna. Your consciousness is connected to transcendence. So when your consciousness is connected to transcendence, duality can be over here, duality can be over there. And it's your consciousness is connected to transcendence. You remain undisturbed even when there's provoking circumstances. You can't artificially do that. You can do it transcendentally by connecting to Krishna. Something else? Yes.
Perhaps about gratitude.
Yeah.
I want to understand how we can develop a gratitude towards. It's a kind of conflict situation. How to develop a gratitude towards a person who is giving? We are receiving a lot from that person, but somehow we are angry with that person because of
circumstances. Yeah, whatever.
So from inside, we are angry, but we know we are receiving a lot, and this is the only way we have to develop. But the conflict comes, and it stops. You know, it's the obstacle. You know, mind understand. Yes, we have to develop, but somewhere it gets stuck.
I think we discussed this question once. And your mother offered a suggestion. You remember? Your suggestion was, try counting to 10. Remember that one? I remember that one. And you were saying, it works. And I'll just, you know, something that I learned from studying stress management. There's the autonomic nervous system, and that there's sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, and when becomes reactive, the fight or flight mechanism that's not reasonable, you know, it may be reasonable. Here comes a bear, or here comes somebody with a gun, or, you know, so there's fight or flight. But there may be something that's not reasonable, like you're describing, you know, but something gets triggered and I'm feeling, so you, to move from the parasympathetic to the sympathetic nervous system, you count to 10. It relax. Please try. So there are systems for releasing from the body tension. Like stored impressions that are, they're the triggers. And you know about some of those things. So those are very simple, mechanical based, you know, biological based, you know, the airs of life help control the mind. That's Ayurvedic, or it's Vedic. So by practicing breath control, by learning, that's one technique that one can apply, pranayama, to keep the airs of life in a balanced position, so that when those triggers trigger, you're still in this balanced position. It's, you know, you stay calm even when there's something that would otherwise be sending you, you know, into orbit. So who was it? Somewhere recently. Maybe it was, anyway. You said forgive and forget. So if there's something that I have this, I or someone that's near to me and dear to me has a feeling that, so you know, whether it's you or another person, the same principle applies. So here is some receiving. This is the path that for improvement. But somehow, so your question is gratitude. How do I access that gratitude when I have these other feelings? That's your question. Do a little ceremony. Take those feelings and go to a visual river and just throw them in the river. Ever done anything like that? I've done something like that before. And once you throw them into the river, because the river is moving, they're downstream. You can't access them anymore. Unless you jump in the river and try to swim after those feelings. Just visually, just get rid of them. To the point where you can't just go and grab them again. And then the positive thing is that right away, with one stroke comes the next stroke, and that is bring your attention to something else. So the gratitude is considering the ways in which I have received, so the causes of gratitude. I just got this letter from one devotee who's doing this purposefully. They're writing 10 lines in their gratitude journal every day. You know, my dear mind, let me count the ways, and to write something, you have to bring your consciousness to that something. It helps at least to write something. So you physically, you write something. These are ways in which I'm receiving from this other person. And by going there and just your consciousness going there, it becomes, your consciousness stays there. It just becomes second nature. and compare to that recognition of gratitude and the feeling of gratitude, this other thing is it subsides. Its strength is diminished. That's the positive. The other is like neutralizing the negative. But strengthening turn the light on, the darkness is driven away. And the difficulty is the darkness is still encroaching. And I pay attention to that darkness. So minimized by those other methodologies or techniques, and purposefully cultivate that, you know, acknowledging different. And invest in that mood of gratitude, it becomes a prominent mood. Where attention goes, energy flows. It works. So that energy that's going over there comes over here. Are you a visual person? Okay, here's a visual image. Some water spills on the counter. And it's just like this blob of water that's going over this direction. It's heading for the edge of the counter. So you just take your finger and make a path going over that way. And you put a little, like, you know, receptacle to catch the water over that way. Just keep going that way, going that way, going that way. What happens? It goes that way. It stops going the other way. It just goes that way. So do that. Just take your finger and go over there. Put attention over there. There's this energy coming. Have it, just direct it. The energy of attachment to some other feeling besides the gratitude feeling, anger feeling, or whatever that other feeling is. Take that same energy and direct it over there. It works. Withdraw. Invest. Withdraw from this, invest it over here. And it'll go. Just keep moving your finger. It'll go. Something else. Yes.
A general question, Guru Maharaj, just on sacrifice.
On sacrifice. Well, the highest is subordinate to Krishna. But, oh dear mother of Prahlad, are you not sacrificing many, many hours of every single day? Yes? You're subordinating your interest to the interest of your little darling son. He wants, and you're subordinating your interest to his interest. Isn't it? But that's because you've made that your interest. But it's his interest has become your interest. So that's love. You're subordinate. We're doing those things. All the time, we're doing those things. That's an example. And in a life in devotion, we do those things which we know are pleasing to Guru and Krishna. And that's anukulyasya sankalpa. It's going to enhance my devotional service. And therefore I do them. Yes? That's the principle. That's the application of the principle. Does that address your question? Not really. You got to look happy. We're talking about multiple people. Two people, then multiple people. It's like Kailash and Anju and their family. They're hosting us here. Their happiness is to do that. But, so, in one sense, they're not subordinating their interest to the interests of others. It's their interest. But in another sense, there's an act of subordination to, there's the interest of others. Let's come together and so we'll facilitate it. That's service. It's service with a smile, but it's service. We're subordinating our interests to the interests of others. That's a sacrifice. Is that all right? A little better. Okay. You have something? Okay, yes.
It's regarding Mataji's question.
Which Mataji? Ah, yes, okay. Different family members, different positions.
Yeah. So you gave an example like where children help more in the progress, like they're showing more signs of Krishna consciousness.
Well, some do. Some is the other way around.
My question is the other way. Like if kids are a part of family, they are not...
Let's hope so. Go ahead.
If they are not taking us in the right direction or they're trying to pull us down from the path where we are, so in that kind of situation, how should we react or what should we do?
It depends. I mean, there's short term and there's long term. The long term, the short term may be to demonstrate my commitment to that dependent. I'll externally, I'll just be, you know, I'll lighten up and okay. Maybe I won't do that. Maybe I will do that. But if I do that, it's the commitment is to the relationship, because sometimes, you know, the ultimately we all want to be happy, and there are different ideas of what happiness means. And children may think happiness means something other than what the adult is thinking that happiness means. But so the parent may go the direction of what the child is thinking is happiness, to show the commitment to the person, their child. And it, you know, can short term maybe win a moment and maybe a longer period of time. It could be weeks and months. But the commitment is the commitment to the relationship. But the internal is the commitment to the relationship and ultimately relationship with Krishna. Because we're as a family, we're all part and parcel of Krishna, part of Krishna's family. So then there's like long term, and because I'm internally committed to my relationship with Krishna and my family members' relationship with Krishna, I'm not going to forever stay in the compromised position. But it may be for some extended time till that family member can understand what, you know, you're committed to that person, that family member. And the real interest of that family member is at heart. And then, at least I, as the parent in the relationship within the family, I'm going to continue internally and in time, certainly also externally, cultivating my Krishna consciousness. So it also depends on the age and stage of life of that family member. Like, so there's so many variables. And, you know, yeah, the age and stage of life of the family member.
Can I ask you this, Madam? I got this question because like I when I watched Abhay Charan video.
Okay.
Like Prabhupada was giving the choice to his wife, you know, would you prefer coffee, I mean tea or whatever, or me? And she keeps sipping on coffee. So and then the next day evening. So sometimes, you know, like I don't mean to say like I don't have a nice family or something. Like they are really healthy. Because of them I'm here.
But
so, like a situation, you know, like when I talk to some of my friends and things, like I'm kind of like disturbed. Like I want to do certain things which will help me progress. But I'm like forced into a situation like where I cannot do that devotional service. So it's kind of really, I don't know how to judge that kind of, like, you know, when I remember the, like as you say, like the photographs of memories you have on your brain, that's like, okay, I watched this video, Prabhupada does that, should I do this?
No. There's a quick answer. No hesitation. No. The circumstance in Prabhupada's life was years and years and years and years and years. And, you know, he was who he was, you're not who he was. He was who he was, and his wife was not moving. And in fact was defiant. In fact took his Bhagavatams and sold them to buy tea biscuits. And then, you know, so, like Ramanujacharya and his wife. So, she was offensive and he corrected her. And she did it again and did it again. It was too much. That's Ramanujacharya, not, you know, not you. So, your family, your situation is very, 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 very different. Worlds of different. So, it's not the right choice for you to make. Rather, the wifely and motherly role is a very powerful role to help those who Krishna has arranged to be part of the family in which you're developing your Krishna consciousness. You'll be supportive and help them. And that's to say you're not. I'm just saying that's what you're to do. That's your role. And you perform your role. You do that service for Krishna. And that's the best thing that you can do to help your family members grow in Krishna consciousness. You know, from yourself. Then, you know, internally, you practice and you cultivate. And just like, my goodness, you know, count your blessings. I've seen you and your family members grow substantially over the years that I've since I started coming to St. Louis. Substantially. And you know, I won't just it's my impression without reciting, you know, specific examples in so many ways. So, keep going. Krishna's being very kind upon you and your family members. Not just, you know, look how bad it could be if it was something else, but you have a wonderful situation. And you're growing in Krishna consciousness. Keep going. Increase association. Not necessarily quantitatively, but perhaps quantitatively, but qualitatively, find ways within the family you can increase association. A practical suggestion, for example, is some systematic scripture study, some way that your husband and you can do some scripture study. There's so many different systems of doing that. There's a couple that have done like that. And a number of couples, but you know, the situation has completely changed. Their dynamic in their life and in their family situation has dynamically changed, drastically changed, just by that one thing. So, turn into the Krishna channel. And that's something where your daughter can have nice association with other girls, you know, in addition to the Sunday program. Creatively consider and discuss with Lal Gopal what can be done. He'll come up with 10 things you have to pick from the menu. You know, then it's just maintain it. Something that suits your daughter's nature. Someone that's good association and like that. Step by step. The resources are there. Krishna is very kind. Just reach out. I think I'll end with that. Now, I'm going to have to leave because I have to leave the temple at 4:30 in the morning tomorrow to catch a flight and stuff. So, and I've got it all day long with lawyers in Washington D.C. So, till 6 o'clock at night. So been nice. My plan was to be here for 4 days, and the plan got chopped into half. So 2 days, but it's been nice. Bhakti Siddhanta's disappearance day and Pancha Tattva Yovanananda came back and spent some time with us. Very nice.
Sorry, hard but fortunate. Maharaj's classes have been just amazing. Just so deep. Very wonderful.
So I'm going to head out. So if I'm going to take some prasad, I can take it with me. And thank you all very much for coming, spending these holidays with you. It's been very nice.